Hello, friends, and excuse me. Maybe tonight I will have a chance to do a little continuation. Sorry about that. We are on Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1. Part 9, Video Commentary. And our work, let's see, where does it take us? Basically, we learn that new powers are available to the advancing disciple. And DK tells us that these powers are conditioned by past developments and the presence of these capacities, plus a freedom of movement within the bounds of the hierarchy, which lie far beyond anything he may have dreamed become his. New hierarchical contacts are now possible to him. New responsibility is laid upon his shoulders, and new fields of potency become available for his use in world service. And all of this is if he will just move forward instead of falling back into a former and much more confined position. Because what is said here, he either moves forward towards the door of light, where the Master takes his hand and the angel of the presence becomes potent and active in a way I may not describe to you, he says, or he drops back temporarily. That's good that he has given us that word, at least. He drops back temporarily into the life condition of the lower man. So that's where we are at the moment, as we ended program 40 and are now beginning program 41 on this fourth day of September 2021. Let's see what DK has to say here. He says, "You have often heard that the guru or teacher in the East would teach his disciple by the giving of a hint. If you have read and studied the ancient writings of India, and who today has not read at least some of them, I guess he means among those who are aspirants and disciples. So he says, if you have read and studied the ancient writings of India, you will have noted that these hints fall into two categories. So let's note that, and see what is the point he is trying to make now, as far as the modern disciple is concerned. So, number one, hints anent personal character in relation to reality and preparation for initiation. And number two, hints anent the oneness of deity and man's relation to an ascertained and gained unity. Now here we can ask, is he saying that unity is different from oneness? And very often in these teachings, we understand that unity still keeps the various interrelated perceptions under the eye, whereas when oneness of deity is achieved, the perception of being and of oneness becomes more important than the interaction of the multiplicity. So, looks like we have here personal hints, because this whole edifice is built upon character, and according to one's character, so will the preparation for initiation proceed successfully or not, and then these greater hints. Now, what else? Apparently, there's more. To these were later added teachings concerning the creative process, when God made the worlds. Well, I guess we can say made the worlds, or in a way became the worlds. I'm sorry, it seems to be something stuck there. So, hints concerning at least what we call the creative process, or the process of becoming. And DK goes on, and much concerning energy and the development of the centers, Laya Yoga, as it is technically called. So we can add to this number three, is this about creating the worlds, and number four is Laya Yoga. These are the four subjects, I think, about which hints are given. And maybe I can just put a three there and a four there, even though this is not found in the text. Anyway, DK tells us that these four lines of teaching are practically all that is given, and all the training offered was of an exoteric nature. The person the oneness of deity, the creative process, and Laya Yoga. And all the training given was of an exoteric nature. Now, I wonder why he says that, when some of this is about the oneness of deity. But okay, let's continue to follow. Right. Maybe now there's going to be more that we will have to consider. So DK goes on and says, you will see for yourselves that it was preparatory in nature, and that the training for initiation was so deeply hidden in the emphasis laid upon the relation of guru and disciple that it did not find expression in words, and was not, therefore, revealed in any way. So we have the idea of preparatory revelations, and we have something else that he's really talking about, and that's the training for initiation, which was somehow concealed and not given as today, or nor were the ways of discovering it indicated as they are today. The few possible symbolic hints and meanings have been investigated, and the erudite esotericist has already drained these sources of information dry. So don't we get the idea that DK is about to offer us some additional information about preparation for initiation and about the hints that may lead to that condition. And therefore, yeah, there was a tremendous emphasis upon the relation to the guru and of the disciple. So there were limitations in the way hints were given in the past. I would say, you know, DK must be generalizing to a certain extent, because every master will have his way of conveying hints. But he has such a large overview, and he himself was involved in that very process, that, let's just say, it probably covers the majority of cases. Now further, he tells us what he's trying to do. And he says, what I am seeking to do is to carry the teaching another stage outward and make exoteric what the master taught his disciple in the ancient days, when fundamental truths anent the universal consciousness had been somewhat grasped by the disciple, and the particular had been so successfully worked out in its rightful place and manner by the disciple. So this is Master D.K. saying, I am seeking to extend the teaching. Okay. And let's see if we can. So, carry the teaching outward and make it still more exoteric. Well, I think the whole paragraph is important, or this whole section. When the fundamental truths had anent the universal consciousness had been somewhat grasped. He's never looking for the entire grasping of the entire subject. Always a certain level can be reached, and then it is possible to proceed. And D.K., let's say, has taught us many particulars. Now, in the old days as well, the guru could teach the particulars, and when they were successfully apprehended, and the fundamental truths anent the universal consciousness were also reasonably apprehended, then it would be possible to go farther. And that's mainly what D.K.'s teaching is all about, going always farther than was possible in the past in preparation for the Aquarian Age. And its peculiar type of knowledge and the wonders, that word has always struck me, and the wonders that can unfold for the disciple, for the truly advancing disciple. Now, D.K. goes on and says, the old rule ever remains an unalterable rule that all true esoteric teaching begins with the universal and ends with the particular. It's more the deductive method, isn't it, than the inductive method. Though it seems that there are times when many particulars have to be mastered, and maybe a deeper penetration into the universal will follow. So, but he's asking us to be aware of the old rule, from the universal to the particular. And I don't know if that's the way we study. Perhaps it is. And I think maybe some of us do study in that way. So now he goes on describing what he has to do? He says, "It is my difficult task to put into modern language and into symbolic forms these hitherto unwritten rules. Much that has been given out since the time that HPB struggled and worked has been truth, including information anent initiation." I think he's trying to enlarge on that now. "Much," he says, "has been fanciful and grievously distorted, and I think we simply have to look closely at some of the theosophical writings following the days of a true initiate, HPB, to see that fancy or imagination at work, and the distortion of the whole anticipation of the initiatory process, which apparently he wants to give to us. I mean, he wants us to see it with some degree of reality, rather than get involved in the fancy. And if he uses a word like grievous or grievously, he's going to mean it. So he wants to take us out of the fanciful and grievous when it comes to preparation for initiation, which any true disciple is necessarily engaged in. So he recognizes he has some difficult assignment here. My difficult task, he calls it. I guess we don't look at the master's problem often enough as he tries to translate ancient traditions into words that will be meaningful to even the intelligent aspirant and advancing disciple. So frequently, Master DK says, "Well, look at this from the point of view of the Christ. Look at this from my point of view, from the Master's point of view. What is the material with which I have to work? It's you. And it doesn't present a very pretty picture." He didn't put it just like that, but you know what I mean. There are many limitations in the material, the human material, with which he has had perforce to work. I guess so many of us are self-centered and have failed adequately to become decentralized, that we naturally think about, well, what does it mean to me? And we identify ourselves, therefore, first with the personality and don't think of the point of view of those who are attempting to help us. This whole process, as given in this book and its introduction, can be understood as a significant entry into a more decentralized point of view. And once that is achieved, then maybe we'll be able to be of some kind of reasonable help in the manifestation of the divine plan, at least that part of it that lies within our scope of accomplishment. There's so much about the divine plan which simply is beyond our understanding. And I would say even beyond the understanding of the masters, maybe the Chohans will understand more, and maybe the three great lords, Manu, Bodhisattva, Mahachohan, understands still more than the average Chohan. Okay. So going on with what D.K. is saying here, when a neophyte first of all applies to the master for training needed prior to initiation, what would you say was the master's problem? Well, there we go. The master is trying to help us see it from his point of view. And on a lower turn of the spiral, those students who were given invitations to be part of DK's work with specialized groups and so forth, they did apply. They had to fill out a certain form, and some of those forms on which they listed their rays and their astrological signs, some of those forms have been located. And it's interesting to see that they oftentimes have a view of themselves which is quite different from the corrections that the master would soon be making as he started to write them their twice yearly letters, or later a letter every year, or maybe even 2 years, when the war, Second World War, called for the attention of the master in a way that we cannot fathom. But certainly it was a call which was more important than handling the personal suggestions to those who had been part of these groups of nine that he began to form. Of course, he never abandoned the students, and even though he had to think far ahead, he gave them material that would keep them busy productively for the years in which he could not write to them in the usual way. So again, we're trying to look at this from a decentralized point of view. And it's about, to a certain extent here, about the training needed prior to initiation. I mean, presumably a master has his eye open, and the disciple or the true aspirant, but especially the accepted disciple, is preparing for the next initiation. So what does the master see? And I guess we've learned that the master sees far more than the disciple sees about himself. So it can come as quite a shock to the disciple who is receiving the letters of, what should we call them, letters of clarification. And of course, of great and loving support. Now, D.K. goes on and says, I am assuming that the master knows his disciple well, is convinced of his sincerity and of the appropriateness of his appeal. Well, we, if we are in those kinds of groups drawn around the ashram, we have been studied. And at the very least, for all of our faults, the master counts on us as being sincere in our aspiration, and therefore our appeal for instruction is appropriate. D.K. goes on to say, I am also assuming that you realize that the so-called appeal is the quality of the life lived, the service rendered, and the presence of an illumined mind, illumined through some definite measure of soul contact. So, yeah, it's not simply a request, a verbal request. The disciple has to have shown something in action, and that is the quality of the life lived, the service rendered, and the presence of an illumined mind. This, all this, the master will see. And if these qualities are not there, then the appeal is not appropriate for further, well, for training by the master, let us say. I guess ever since we have taken the first initiation as a true aspirant, in that group, all but one had taken that first initiation. From that time onward, we have to demonstrate something. And the master will continue to judge the advisability of drawing us closer to the periphery of the ashram, or in that stage of chela in the light, the inner subjective disciple of a more advanced kind will be reporting to the master about our progress in demonstrating something that is along the line that the master seeks to see externalized. What brings about the illumination of the mind? Well, a definite measure of soul contact. Unless we have the mind held steady in the light of the soul, there will not be illumination of that mind. The mind instead could remain the source of much confining illusion. But, you know, bear in mind, we have been studied if we are gathered around the master for further training, as so many of those people, maybe 50, 51 people, some number like that, had been gathered around Master DK for further training. Now let's see what else he has to say. The following: the master's problem is to teach him, meaning of course any disciple in those days, maybe people were not as careful with the language as they are now. The master's problem is to teach him or her the stabilization of the relation between soul and body. We think of the soul, mind, brain as a type of alignment which is frequently suggested as necessary. So the master's problem is to teach him the stabilization of the relation between soul and body, so that at will contact can be established between them. Well, we can imagine this would be very useful if the disciple was engaging in some phase of the externalization process, the manifestation process. DK goes on and says, the astral body provides no hindrance that amounts to anything. Remember when he says not one single thing in arising in the astral body is allowed to make any difference. So, again, repeating what he's saying, the astral body provides no hindrance that amounts to anything. And through that soul contact, a facile relation to the hierarchy, its purposes and resources can be made. So this is, in a way, what we might say, firstly, because there are other factors which have to be considered. The master's problem is to teach all these things so that a more facile, it's a word which means basically easy, flowing, and this is what he has to do. This is what the student has to learn to do. Stabilization. Along several different lines. So, you know, now we're examining the master's problem as he is trying to train his disciple for the initiation which lies immediately ahead. Secondly, okay, and the word is there, so we'll use it. Secondly, the nature of energy and its wise utilization through the medium of an integrated personality is indicated. I guess he didn't say force. He did say energy. It's a higher instance of that vitalizing something which can flow in and eventually render the personality, the dweller, the instrument of the angel of the presence. So, you know, do we understand energy and its wise utilization? Okay, all of this is part of the master's problem. What to teach the disciple, and maybe how to teach the disciple. Maybe that's rather more up to the master and his esoteric techniques. So we'll go on. with what Master DK is saying here about his problem. It is essential, he says, that one thing be grasped by all of you prior to your undertaking work with me. So, again, we see that this section of the book was written to all of them as talks to disciples, and they were, in a way, just getting started. Okay, so what is this essential thing? Sometimes it seems like there are so many essentials, so well organized, so many detailed outlines that we are supposed to follow. And I guess he was counting on the instructions that he sent to these prospective accepted disciples, but certainly accepting disciples, that they would be read over and over again until they really sank into the consciousness. Now he goes on. He says, it is that in a group of disciples such as this, the large majority have already taken the first initiation and are being prepared for later initiations. There is nothing surprising, he says, in this statement or any particular cause for elation or for pleasure. We note that he's subduing possible egotistical personal reaction to that thought. There is nothing surprising in this statement, or any particular cause for elation or for pleasure. At one point he says to one of the very glamored disciples, LTSK, that so far he has failed to stand before the Lord, the initiator, the Christ, so far. But he's still being included out of gratitude and for his own protection. So there's nothing surprising in this statement, or any particular cause for elation, or for pleasure. Those are both astral reactions, aren't they? And we go on with what he says. An immense number of the world aspirants evidence through their aliveness to the spiritual issues, through their intensity, the intensity of their aspiration, and through their struggles to be good, self-sacrificing and wise, that the life of the indwelling Christ is most definitely moving in them and is present in their hearts. And I think this is an important section here, which puts things into proportion. Many aspirants, true aspirants, existed in those days, and even more today, and here are qualifications to demonstrate the presence of the first initiation within them. Aliveness to spiritual issues, intensity of aspiration, their struggles to be good, self-sacrificing, and wise, sort of a love-wisdom response, they're demonstrating that the life of the indwelling Christ is most definitely moving in them. May I say that would be the result of facing the initiator, and is present in their hearts. And so it indicates how the heart is touched at this particular initiation. Normally, we might think of the first initiation as involving the sacral center and the throat center, and indeed it does. But the heart at each initiation is constantly enhanced in its esoteric functioning. So that tells us, to a degree, where we stand as hopefully true aspirants along the way, attempting to be good, self-sacrificing, and wise. The initiation, he says, of spiritual fixation upon the physical plane. Oh, these are some really good words by which to know the first initiation and perhaps others here. The initiation of spiritual fixation upon the physical plane, as the birth in Bethlehem, the first initiation is sometimes called, has already been undergone by thousands, and they are sincerely and definitely moving forward upon the way. It's such a good rubric, title, identifier, that it seems worth to make a strong note of that name. Sometimes you're asked, well, what are the characteristics of the person who has taken the first initiation? And you find that there is a scattering of information about how, for instance, the new group of world servers can identify such people. And this is one of the, in my opinion, one of the really good ones, or memorable descriptions. The initiation of spiritual fixation upon the physical plane. There's also what we call the birth of the Christ in the heart. That's another memorable description. And the birth at Bethlehem, another one. So at that time, thousands had undergone this initiation, and with the revolution in consciousness, such as it appeared during the latter part of the 20th century, maybe beginning in the 1960s, we can expect that many more will have undergone this experience, and many would be hovering around the possibility of going through this experience. And the way in this case is the normal way of initiation, but there's also the way of higher evolution, which at a certain point supervenes. Once the initiation of transfiguration opens up and the monad comes into play and decisions can be made, for instance, at the fifth degree about treading that way. The way and the path, you know. Sometimes the way is considered more advanced than the path, but sometimes when discussing the way of higher evolution, certain paths are indicated. And the name of these paths, well, he's given seven of them. There are now nine, but the names of the additional two, page 412 of Rays and the Initiations, are not given. Not yet. DK goes on to say, I would remind you here that many, many lives can elapse between the first initiation and the second. Long interludes of silent and almost unapparent growth. Well, this is, may we say, exemplified by the life of the initiate Jesus, who underwent what we would call the birth, at his birth, and then later, the baptism 30 years later took place. Although there were many mysterious things that happened within his consciousness during those 30 years, including, perhaps as Agni Yoga seems to present as a possibility, a pilgrimage to India, where who knows who he met and what the plan of his life may have gained because of those contacts. It's so interesting to see Master DK trying to keep away that kind of glee or excitement or even exaltation about taking the first degree. It is not unusual. So he tries to keep everything in place. And he says to his gathered disciples, you are in no way unique or far ahead of the senior world aspirants. Now, a true aspirant has taken the first degree. A senior world aspirant can be an applicant even to the third degree, and of course is an accepting disciple, which leads, we have been taught in this series of instructions, into actual acceptance, such as we are dealing with here, where the master is writing letters and taking over some of the training of the accepting disciple, who has now become, in a sense, the accepted disciple. You are in no way unique or far ahead of the senior world aspirants. Matter of fact, they may be well ahead of you, he's basically telling those who have been gathered. In that lies the cause for encouragement and humility. And why would we say so? Those two words, encouragement and humility. Well, certainly the humility part of it, the decentralization part of it, is what he's trying to achieve in their consciousness. But of course, they are on the way, and they have taken the first degree. There is the indication that they are on the path of initiation, even though the initiation is preliminary. The first two being, shall we say, preliminary, probationary initiations. And then he says something important. It is naturally, and something that means we should be understanding it without him having to tell us, it is naturally not my intention to state who is being prepared for any particular initiation. That is a matter for each of you to discover for himself. It is a matter of interior orientation and not a matter of outside information. Well, those were the intentions, at least at the time of this writing. Later, here and there, he seemed to drop a hint, and sometimes he was more explicit about the initiation for which a particular disciple was being prepared. For instance, was it DHB, William Miller, the headquarters astrologer, we might call him, DK said, you remind me of myself when I was preparing for the third initiation. And when it came to ISGL, we learned that in the struggles of that very earnest disciple, that he was not indeed preparing for the fourth degree, but could be passing through the second degree. If he was conscientious about doing what the Tibetan advised. So sometimes a little bit later in the teaching and in letters here and there, indication was given as to which initiation the disciple was preparing for. But in general, the method of the disciples' understanding was through inner orientation. And I suppose, you know, through reading up on the initiations and understanding what were the requirements and assessing what requirements he had fulfilled or was in process of fulfilling. Now it looks like we have a section here which might be a natural breaking point. Because you know, Tuya and I have these broadcasts we're doing, and I'm not in any condition to be rushing the process. So this is a program of about an hour's duration. And it has taken us trying to see what the page number might be, taken us to page 95, looks like. Yeah, it has taken us to page 95. Yeah, so it is interesting to see sometimes the contrast between DK's firm intentions and then what he may deem to be necessary as he goes along with the instruction of these students. And we have to kind of remember that we will be such students in the future. If we will to be such, and if we fulfill the detailed instructions that he has given us. So, Program 41 has taken us up to page 95. And I will be, you know, being a little conservative here, making a shorter program. Spiritual fixation upon the physical plane. Maybe fixation and polarization are similar words. Sometimes when we talk about being mentally polarized at a relatively early stage of our development, we should say we are spiritually fixated upon the mental plane. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have passed the temptations in the desert, which is the indication of the ability to call yourself mentally polarized. So we have three words there. We have the idea of mental focus. We have then mental fixation, which need not be the same thing as an ide fix, which is an obstacle, to say the least. And then finally we have mental polarization. Now our next, we're inching towards the conclusion of section one, and we will begin next time, whenever that will be. I always put XX because I don't know. And here, page 95 will be our beginning, and he's going to be talking about the taking of the first three major initiations. He used to say that he was training people only for the first two, and then later it seemed that he was training some of his disciples, such as William Miller, I think it's DHB, for the third, and maybe others. Okay. Everything he says here about initiation is of importance because it's an area in which so much glamour can arise. And we have to avoid that at all costs, because it's not just a world problem, it still is a discipleship problem and needs to be monitored carefully. Fortunately, in the book Glamour, a World Problem, various methods of monitoring our own glamours and discovering them, which is not necessarily an easy process, those methods are given. I think we can say that Master DK has given us what we need, and more than we can absorb. And still more is coming, but it's meant to be divided among many aspirants and disciples, and not everyone can do everything. It just can't be done, given our time-space condition. Now, it surely is my hope that I've done this correctly. I think I have. So, friends, that'll be it for right now. And BL will put this up on Makara, and Harold and Joe will make sure that it's up on our YouTube channel, Moria Federation Esoteric Education. And the possibility of us deepening our studies is ever with us, if we will but recognize the importance of doing so, and will take advantage of the opportunity which is offered. Okay, so from Tuya and myself and the whole team, lots of love and many blessings to you, and success in your assimilation and application. We'll be seeing you soon. Bye for now.